Chapter 5, Part 1. The Reverend Caleb Dane Calthrop and his wife Maud Dane Calthrop were both unusual personalities. Dane Calthrop lived for his books and in his study. Mrs. Dane Calthrop was quite the opposite. She was frighteningly aware of everything around her. She had a long, thin face and always spoke in a very sincere way. I soon learned that almost everyone in the village was slightly afraid of her. The day after Megan had come to lunch, Mrs. Dane Calthrop stopped me in the high street.
"Oh, Mr. Burton. Now, what did I want to see you about? Something rather unpleasant, I think."
"I'm sorry about that," I said.
"Ah, anonymous letters. That's it. Why have you brought anonymous letters to Limstock?"
"I didn't bring them," I said. "They were here already."
"Nobody got any until you came, though."
"Yes, they did. Several people got them."
"Oh, dear," she said. "That's all wrong. We're not like that here, and it upsets me, because I ought to know about it."
"How could you know?" I asked.
"Because I usually do, and they are such silly letters too."
"Have you had any yourself?" Her eyes opened wider.
"Oh, yes, three. I forget exactly what they said. It was something about Caleb and the schoolteacher. Very silly."
She paused.
"And there are so many things the letters might say but don't. That's what is so strange. They don't seem to know any of the real things."
"What do you mean exactly?"
"Well, of course, there is plenty of adultery here, and more. So why doesn't the writer use those secrets? What did they say in your letter?"
"They suggested that my sister wasn't my sister."
"And is she?"
"Joanna is certainly my sister." She nodded.
"That just shows you what I mean. I expect there are other things."
She looked at me thoughtfully, and I suddenly understood why Limstock was afraid of Mrs. Dane Calthrop. For once, I was delighted when Amy Griffith's loud voice called,
"Hello, Maud. I'm glad I've seen you. I want to change the date for the Red Cross sale. I must just go into the grocer's, then we'll talk, if that suits you. Good morning, Mr. Burton."
"Yes, that will do quite well," said Mrs. Dane Calthrop.
But Amy Griffith had already gone, and she shook her head.
"Poor thing."
I was confused. Surely she could not feel sorry for Amy. But she went on,
"You know, Mr. Burton, I'm rather afraid."
"About this letter business?"
"Yes. You see, it must mean..."
She paused. Then she said slowly, as though she was solving a problem,
"It must mean that it was caused by blind hatred."
"Yes, blind hatred.
But even a blind man might put a knife in the heart purely by chance. And what would happen then, Mr. Burton?"
We were to know that before another day had passed. Part 2. It was Partridge who brought the news of the tragedy. She came into Joanna's bedroom in the morning.
"There's awful news, Miss Burton," she said as she pulled back the curtains. "Shocking. I couldn't believe it when I heard."
"What's awful?" said Joanna, trying to wake up.
"Poor Mrs. Symington."
She paused.
Dead!
Dead?
Joanna sat up in bed, now wide awake.
Yes, and what's worse,
she committed suicide.
Oh no, Partridge!
Joanna was really shocked.
Yes, it's the truth, but she was driven to it, poor thing.
Not.
Joanna's eyes questioned Partridge, and Partridge nodded.
That's right. One of those evil letters.
What did it say?
But unfortunately, Partridge had not been able to find out.
They're unpleasant things, said Joanna. But I don't see why they would make someone want to commit suicide.
Not unless they were true, Miss Burton.
And Partridge left the room. When Joanna came in to tell me the news, I thought of what Dr. Griffith has said, that sooner or later, the letter writer would hit the mark. Now they had with Mrs. Symington. She, the woman you would least suspect, had had a secret.
How awful for her husband, Joanna said. And for Megan. Do you think...
She paused.
I wonder if she'd like to come and stay with us for a day or two.
We'll go and ask her, I said. We went down to the Symington's house after breakfast. We were a little nervous, because we did not want to seem too interested in what had happened. Luckily, we met Owen Griffith just coming out through the gate.
Oh, hello, Burton. I'm glad to see you. What an awful business.
Good morning, Dr. Griffith, said Joanna loudly.
Griffith's face went red.
Oh, good morning, Miss Burton.
I thought perhaps, said Joanna, that you didn't see me.
Owen Griffith got redder still.
I'm so sorry. I was thinking.
Joanna went on.
After all, I am standing right in front of you.
I interrupted quickly.
My sister and I wondered whether it would be a good thing if Megan came and stayed with us for a day or two. What do you think?
I think it would be an excellent thing, he said. It would be good for her to get away. Miss Holland is doing very well, but she really has quite enough to do with the two boys and Symington himself. He's quite heartbroken.
It was, I paused,
suicide.
Griffith nodded.
Oh, yes. She wrote, I can't go on a torn bit of paper, and the anonymous letter was found in the fireplace.
What did...
I stopped. Sorry, I said.
Griffith gave a quick, unhappy smile. It will have to be read at the inquest. But the suggestion was that the second boy, Colin, was not Symington's child.
Do you think that was true?
I asked.
I've only been here 5 years, but I thought the Symingtons were a happy couple who loved each other and their boys. It's true that Colin doesn't look very much like his parents. He's got red hair, for one thing, but that's not unusual.
His red hair may have been the reason for the suggestion.
It probably was.
But it just happened to be correct, said Joanna. Or she wouldn't have killed herself, would she?
Griffith said,
I'm not sure. I've been treating her for a nervous condition, so she may have thought that her husband would not believe her when she said the story wasn't true. And Owen walked away slowly down the street.
Joanna and I went on into the house. The front door was open, and it seemed easier than ringing the bell, especially when we heard Elsie Holland's voice from inside the sitting room.
But Mr. Symington, you must eat something. You haven't had anything since lunchtime yesterday, and you will be ill if you don't eat or drink.
Symington said, You're very kind, Miss Holland, but...
A nice cup of hot tea, said Elsie Holland.
Personally, I would have given the poor fellow something stronger. He was sitting in a chair, looking very confused. But he took the tea and said, Thank you so much, Miss Holland. You are being so good to me.
It's nice of you to say that, Mr. Symington. And don't worry about the children. I'll look after them. Also, if I can help in any other ways, like letter writing or telephoning, please do ask me.
Then, as Elsie Holland turned to go, she saw us and hurried out into the hall.
Isn't it terrible?
She whispered.
Can we speak to you for a moment?
Asked Joanna. Elsie Holland led the way into the dining room.
It's been awful for Mr. Symington. It's been such a shock. But, of course, Mrs. Symington had been behaving strangely for some time. She had been very nervous and often crying. What we really came for, said Joanna, was to ask if Megan could stay with us for a few days. That is, if she'd like to come.
Elsie Holland looked surprised.
Megan? I don't know. I mean, one never knows what she is going to feel about anything.
Joanna said,
We thought it might be a help. Oh, well, of course it would. I mean, I haven't really had time to pay much attention to Megan. I think she's upstairs somewhere. I don't know if...
Joanna looked at me, and I went quickly out into the hall. I found Megan in a room at the top of the house. The curtains were drawn across the windows, and she was curled up on a bed in the dark, like a frightened animal. Megan, I said gently. She looked at me, but she did not move. Megan, I said again. Joanna and I have come to ask you if you would like to come and stay with us for a few days.
Stay with you? In your house?
Her expression did not change. Yes.
You mean you'll take me away from here?
Yes, Megan. Suddenly, she began to shake all over.
Oh, do take me away. Please. It's so awful being here and feeling so evil. Can we go now?
Well, when you've packed a few things that you'll need, I'll be downstairs. I returned to the dining room. Megan's coming, I said.
Oh, that is good,
Elsie Holland replied.
It will stop her thinking about herself all the time, and it will be so good for me not to have to think about her as well as everything else. I hope she won't be too difficult. Oh dear, there's the telephone. I must go and answer it.
She hurried out of the room. Joanna said,
What an angel!
You said that rather unkindly, I told her. And Miss Holland is obviously very dependable.
Very, and she knows it.
Before I could reply, there was the sound of a suitcase bumping down the stairs. It annoyed me that Joanna had to lift it into the car. I could manage with one stick now, but I couldn't do anything that needed real strength. Anyway, we all got in and she drove off. But as soon as we reached Little Furs and went into the sitting room, Megan sat down and burst into tears. She cried loudly, like a small child. So I quickly left the room and went to find something that might cheer her up. When I came back, I handed Megan a glass.
What is it?
A cocktail, I said. Her tears immediately stopped.
I've never drunk a cocktail.
She tasted the drink carefully. Then a big smile spread over her face, and she swallowed the rest all at once.
Oh, it's lovely. Can I have another?
No.
Why not?
In about 10 minutes, you'll probably understand.
Oh,
Megan turned to Joanna.
It is so kind of you to have me here. I am really very grateful.
Please, don't be grateful, said Joanna. We are glad to have you here. Jerry and I are so bored because we can't think of any more things to say to each other.
But now, I said, we shall be able to have lots of interesting discussions about Shakespeare's characters. Goneril and Regan, perhaps. Megan suddenly smiled.
I've been thinking about that. They behaved badly because that awful old father of theirs always forced them to be so grateful. When you have to keep saying thank you and how very kind, it would make you want to be very unpleasant for a change.
I'm afraid I always find Shakespeare very boring, said Joanna.
All those long scenes where everybody is drunk and it's supposed to be funny.
Talking of drink, I said, how are you feeling, Megan?
Very well, thank you.
Not at all confused. You can't see two Joannas or anything like that.
No, I just feel as though I'd like to talk rather a lot.
Perfect, I said. Keeping a clear mind while enjoying alcohol is a great advantage to any human being.